Nacho Land Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the 46th episode of the Calcio Land podcast. So today we are going to review what happened in Serie A over the weekend, talk about Conte's new controversial statements about wanting to return to Italy, discuss the crisis at Milan with Montella, Higuain's being somewhat on the hot seat at Juve, and then at the end of the podcast, I am very excited for a discussion on Curb Your Enthusiasm, my favorite comedy ever, with my good friend David Tenenbaum. So as usual, we keep all the pop culture stuff at the end. If you aren't interested in Curb Your Enthusiasm before the interview part, feel free to drop out of the podcast. But before we get to all this good stuff, I am joined by our great producer and co-host, Alex Goldberg. I know you well enough that I think this was a roller coaster past few days for you. We had another great performance by Morata. And then this morning, I woke up to the quotes from Conte saying that he won't stay abroad much longer and that his goal is to return to Italy. So I wanted to make sure you were still okay, Alex. I just wanted to check in with you, buddy. I was a little bit worried when I saw those quotes.
Well, thank you, David. That's very thoughtful of you. I'm alive. I am alive. I am still breathing. Oh, boy. What a roller coaster is right. Great win for Chelsea. Alvaro Morata becoming a Chelsea god, getting a hat trick. Now he knows how to score with his feet as well. And then, yes, Antonio Conte saying today, he doesn't know how much longer he'll be in England. It's inevitable that he will be returning to Italy. I'm going to choose to go the glass half full approach. I rarely do that on Twitter, but I feel like I do that a lot on the podcast. So let's go with that. I'm going to compare those remarks from Conte to the ones of Eden Hazard's every time he is asked about where he's going to go in the future. He's constantly asked about if he's going to go to Real Madrid, and he goes, I'm happy at Chelsea, I'm happy at Chelsea. Who knows about the future, but for right now, I'm happy at Chelsea. And then they ask him specifically about PSG, because these days, what superstar is not being asked about PSG? And the answer that he always gives when he's asked about PSG is, if I'm going to any team in Ligue 1, it's going to be Lille. He's loyal to Lille. He'd be going back to Lille. With Conte, I compare it to if Antonio Conte is ever going to go anywhere else, it's going back to Italy. Not necessarily one specific team. You've already brought to my attention a few teams that he may manage. But overall, Italy, Antonio Conte, Eden Hazard, Lille. I'm just a little bit more worried that Conte is going to Italy before Hazard's going to Lille. But that's what I'm going to choose to do. I'm going to pretend that it's going to be a lot longer from now, even though he kind of made me nervous and is making me think it's going to be in the very near future. So I wish I could just focus on the Alvaro Morata hat trick, but I can't. That also alludes to what I watched this weekend. David, what did you watch this weekend?
I really had an overdose of Serie A now that they have this new Saturday morning game for us in the U.S. So I watched Roma, which was good. I haven't seen enough of them, and I feel a little bit caught up. I've watched Napoli win in Spal. Unfortunately, Milik got hurt. It's funny that Sarri was complaining about the pitch there in the stadium in Ferrara, and unfortunately, it looks like it might have something to do with Milik tearing his ACL once again. And on Sunday, I watched Milan against Sampdoria. I watched the Inter-Genoa match, and then I watched a little bit of Fiorentina-Atalanta. It was just a lot to watch, a lot of interesting things. I really didn't watch too much the other leagues because I'm really addicted to Gamora, the TV show, and NBA 2K has been good to me, but definitely a lot of great Serie A action this weekend for sure.
Oy vey, what are you doing, Alex? I still don't have NBA 2K18. What a procrastinator. I'm really going to pay for it today because I'm going to go on social media and realize that today is NBA Media Day, where players like Carmelo Anthony will be posing in his new jersey for the Thunder. Get on it, Alex. All right, well, something that we are going to get on is winners and losers. David, who are our winners and losers from the weekend and of episode 46 of the Calcio Land podcast?
So we have quite a few winners, and I tried to spread it out a little bit of different teams. So I'm going to go two in order of the matches that I watched. So to me, a big winner was El Shaarawy for Roma. Had a really good performance against Udinese. In the summer, we wondered, you know, did Roma do enough to replace Mohamed Salah just by bringing in Schick, who, you know, has health concerns. It's not certain he can play on the wing. But El Shaarawy could really make the most of this opportunity in a World Cup year. So he had two goals for it. He had a great performance. So shout out to him. In the derby for Juve, of course, Dybala and Mandzukic are going to get a lot of the headlines. But I can't say enough about how impressed I've been with Pjanic this season. I have to be honest, I've never been a huge fan of his. I just think he was too inconsistent, like too many games where he disappeared. This season, he's been Juve's most consistent player with Dybala. A lot of people are saying, hey, Matuidi's having a big impact on him, and that's certainly possible, but I think Pjanic was playing really well even before Matuidi was inserted in the starting lineup. In that same match, Torino gave up a ton of goals, but their goalkeeper, Sirigu, was tremendous. I think he's been one of the best new additions for a club in Serie A, definitely a big upgrade over Joe Hart. During the Inter match, I thought both the players that came off the bench, Eder and Caramo, changed the match. Caramo was really impressive, put on a little bit of a show. I think he caused one red card and another yellow. He looks like he has the potential to be the type of player we thought Gabigol would be at Inter. I don't want to jinx him. You know, same with Skriniar. He's been tremendous, but then we saw what happened with Murillo, so I don't want to jinx Caramo, but that was a very impressive debut. I thought Torreira on Sampdoria was sensational in that match against Milan. We saw Milan sign Cassie and Biglia. Maybe they should have gone all out for Torreira, who really looks like a little Marco Verratti in the way that he plays. Another big winner was Mandragora, the Juve-owned midfielder. He's been playing very well for Crotone. I was impressed with him when I watched Crotone against Inter. He scored his first Serie A goal of the season over the weekend. Another player on Lazio, Marusic, right wing back. Another of these gems, Lazio sporting director Tara is really great at uncovering these players abroad. Marusic is going to be playing more now that the starting right wing back Basta is hurt. Very impressive performance against Hellas Verona. Couple more winners. I have Chievo striker Inglese, who had an important goal away at Cagliari. Chievo, you know, is always going to be, you know, in the battle to avoid relegation, but they're better than most teams, and these big wins against other smaller teams are so key. The other reason why I have Inglese as a winner is, unfortunately, with Milik hurt, we could see him join Napoli in January. They have an option to buy him with Chievo that they got at the end of the summer transfer window. So he might be the only winner out of the Milik situations. And a couple more players, Fiorentina goalkeeper Sportiello, sensational match against Atalanta. I've always been a big fan of Sportiello. Last season, though, he took a big step back at Atalanta. He's still young enough that he can get his act together, and he had a great performance on Sunday. And the last winner that I have is Napoli left back Ghulam, who looked on his way out after Napoli failed to extend his contract. And he's been, I'd say, the best left back in Serie A this season, maybe with Kolarov on Roma. Alexandro struggled a little bit, although he had his best match of the season against Torino. But Ghulam's been sensational. So those are my winners. The flip side for the losers, I have quite a few. Montella, of course. You know, Milan has a lot of new players, so they are going to need time. At the same time, the management gave him the team in July to try to gel. I'm not sure he knows what formation to use yet. That match against Sampdoria, I don't think they had any shots on goal. Was really, really disappointing. Our friend Thousand and the prediction said that, you know, every time Montella faces a good team with Milan, he gets slapped around. We saw that against Lazio. Going to Genova playing against Sampdoria is always tough, but I don't think anyone expected that bad of a match. Another poor performer in that match was Milan center back Zapata, who had an assist for his cousin, the Sampdoria striker, on the goal. And I'd say three teams that are in big trouble in the battle to avoid relegation are Sassuolo and especially Hellas Verona and Benevento, who really look uninspiring. I think Verona and Benevento are almost a lock to go back to Serie B, and then we'll have some other teams competing for that. And the last one is Higuain. I'll tell you right now, I'd buy this Higuain stock from everyone that wants to sell it. I see a lot of people are really down on him. I think he's going to get his act together. But so far, you looked at how Juve looked with Mandzukic in that number nine role on Saturday. Definitely a little bit of concerns for him. So those are our winners and losers. Always winners are the people that send us in the great Twitter questions. Alex and I have been really impressed with what you've sent us. To do so, just use the Calcioland hashtag. I saw there were a few more that were sent in after I wrote the outline, so we'll get to them later in the week. But which ones are we going over today, Alex?
All right, David, let's start with AC Milan. What should they do with Montella?
So, look, I got to be honest, I've never been a big Montella fan dating back to when he was at Fiorentina. I always thought he was a little bit overrated. I thought at Sampdoria he didn't do particularly well. I think, you know, former players, especially strikers, and Montella always has a great relationship with the media, tend to be a little bit overrated. We've also talked a lot on the podcast that with Milan's great summer, the pressure was going to be on him. He was going to be the fall guy. He also wasn't hired by Milan's current management. To their credit, they believed in him, and I think they've done a good job of setting him up to success. But he's in trouble. There's no doubt about it. Milan's next two matches are against Roma and Inter. If they lose both matches, I wouldn't be shocked if there might be a change coming pretty soon. I personally, there's one manager I know a lot of people are going to disagree. If I was Milan, I would really look at Walter Mazzarri. I think he's a very good manager. I think he's very good with a three-man back line. I think he might actually do well with Milan's personnel. He's very available. So that's someone that I would look at. I think at Inter he was a little bit up and down, but he might do well there. I know a lot of people are kind of putting two and two together, Conte's quotes and Milan potentially having an opening. You know, I'd be very concerned if Milan doesn't make the Champions League. It's kind of a little bit of a catch-22. We saw the quotes from Fassona to The Guardian that a lot of their business plan is based on making the Champions League, and if they don't, they would likely have to sell at least one good player. So you got to wonder if Milan isn't in the Champions League and are in a situation where they have to sell at least one good player, maybe not bolster the team, would that be a job that would be attractive to Conte? The catch-22 is if they make the Champions League, would they keep the manager that brings them there? So I don't think it's so much of a slam dunk that Conte would go there. Certainly possible. Conte likes a challenge and rebuild, but Conte also likes to have a project that he's comfortable in. So it's certainly possible that he goes there. And look, you know, it's no guarantee that he's going to leave Chelsea either. I just don't see it as automatic as some other people. I still think there's time for Montella to get his act together, but if they want to make a change mid-season, I would look at Mazzarri and then see what happens beyond that.
All right, well, staying somewhat on that subject, should Milan forget about the Europa League and just focus on finishing top four in Serie A?
Well, it's an interesting topic because now by winning the Europa League, you can get to the Champions League, and you have to ask yourself, with Milan, is that an easier route than finishing the top four? To me, Juve and Napoli, even with Milik's injury, I see those two as automatic in the top two. Then you have the next group, which is Roma, Inter, Lazio, and Milan. Two out of those four are likely going to go to the Champions League. Milan has to ask themselves, do we have a better chance there or through the Europa League? I think it's just too soon now to punt one over the other. Milan's off to a good enough start now that I think they should try to compete on both fronts. But then, you know, and say a month from now, their squad isn't that deep that they can maybe compete fully on both. So it's a good point, but I would wait at least another month to start making that decision.
Okay, how serious of a dent is Milik's absence for Napoli's Scudetto hopes, and is this the end for Milik?
So So first of all, it's very sad what happened to him. Young player. Oh, he was off to such a great start last season at Napoli before the injury. This season, you know, Napoli, you know, in a way, what's interesting to me is the Pavoletti deal that Napoli did ends up getting worse and worse because they invested a lot in Pavoletti last January, brought him in because they felt they didn't have enough depth because of Milik's injury. So they sold him this summer to Cagliari. Milik's back. Then they don't have Pavoletti anymore. Milik gets hurt, and they sure could use Pavoletti now. Now, we mentioned earlier Chievo striker Inglese will likely come in January, but till then, they're really going to need Mertens to keep going. I've read they could use Callejon or new additions, Ounas, that came from Bordeaux as a false nine. So interesting scenario there. So it's not only Pavoletti to put salt in the wounds. Another striker that Napoli owned, Duvan Zapata, the striker on Sampdoria, had that big goal against Milan. As far as Milik, you know, is this the end for him? That's really hard to say. You know, two ACL surgeries is very serious. It definitely has an impact on people. You know, it's hard not to make parallels to Giuseppe Rossi. And interestingly, Giuseppe Rossi is available to sign. So if Napoli wanted to sign another striker in the short term, that's one area where they could look at. So I hope Milik can come back. He's had a lot of bad luck. I definitely think it's going to have somewhat of an impact for Napoli in their Scudetto hopes. But interesting, like our friend Carlo Garganese said when he came on the show, it doesn't look like they're that interested in the Champions League. They're really focused on the Scudetto. So maybe they'll just start resting Mertens in the Champions League. If you see that, then you know they're definitely not interested in it. So more to come on this situation. In the meantime, we wish the best to Milik.
Amen. Okay, Max Allegri picked Mandzukic over Higuain at the weekend. Is this a sign he's prioritizing getting the most out of Dybala at the expense of Gonzalo Higuain?
So I like this question, too, because it reminds me of when Morata was at Juve and when he lost his starting spot because Mandzukic was just so perfect for Dybala. But now I don't really see it so much as that because Dybala was having a sensational season playing alongside Higuain. So I don't see it so much as we're going to put Mandzukic there to get more out of Dybala. I think, quite frankly, Allegri wanted to give Higuain a little break. They have a lot of matches, including the Champions League, coming up in 2 days. So to me, it was turnover. To me, it's very interesting how, you know, when a player's doing great and he's benched, it's called turnover. When a player is being benched and he's not playing well, it's called being dropped, even if there's a Champions League match coming. I definitely think Higuain needs a little mental break, and Mandzukic is in such good form. To me, it doesn't really matter what role you put Mandzukic in. I think Juve needs to use him as much as possible. I also remember, you know, I was in Turin around November last year. This was the time where Higuain was struggling. There was all this talk that he was clubbing too much, he wasn't focused, and he was overweight, and then he went on a ridiculous goal-scoring streak. So if I could buy everyone's stock that is selling on Higuain, I'd buy it. I think he is going to get back on track very soon. But in the meantime, I wouldn't blame Allegri going with Mandzukic because he has so many options up front. So maybe give him a little break. If I was Allegri too, I would try to bring back the Higuain we saw at Napoli, the one who was so involved with the run at play. At Juve, he just seems more passive and waiting for opportunities to be given to him. I'm not sure if this is more about his form or Juve's formation and strategy, but I'd love to see the Higuain we saw at Napoli back.
Okay, Inter Milan, they've struggled in the past few games. Will Spalletti's team drop off just like Mancini's did?
So interestingly, these were three poor performances in a row for Inter, but they won two of them and one draw. And this was very reminiscent of Mancini, who had them in first place for quite a while, and then the team completely fell apart. So I definitely understand why people are making those parallels. At the same time, I have much more faith in Spalletti than I do in Mancini as a manager. So I'm going to say for now, not quite yet. I reserve the right to change my mind. I need to see a little bit more from Inter. I think Spalletti's done a good job overall, but it's a little bit premature to say this is going to end up like Mancini's squad.
All right, the next Twitter question wants to know, why have there been so many more goals scored in Serie A than in seasons past?
So, for one, Serie A has been a high-scoring offensive league. You know, it's not just this season. It's been going on for a while. But I definitely think there's a couple of reasons why this trend continues. We've talked about on the podcast how last season we had six goal scorers who had over 20 goals in Serie A last season. In years past, we probably would have seen maybe two or three of them be sold abroad. This time, they all stayed in Italy. So we have a lot of excellent strikers in Serie A right now. And then I'd say most of the managers for the top teams, you would describe them as really pretty offensive-minded managers. I think Allegri is more on the pragmatic side. You would never know looking at what you saw from Milan on Sunday against Sampdoria, but Montella is known more usually for an offensive style. Of course, we have Sarri, very offensive-minded. We have Spalletti, quite offensive-minded. I'd say Simone Inzaghi, a little bit more on the Allegri, a little bit more pragmatic side, but he has a lot of intriguing offensive weapons. We've had another team that's done really well in Italy recently, and that's Atalanta, who have Gasperini, who's a very offensive-minded coach. So I think it's between the strikers and the offensive-minded coach that we're seeing a lot of changes in Serie A. This certainly isn't your grandfather's Italian football, that's for sure.
Who are the best right-back prospects in Serie A?
So this was a good question. Someone asked me, and they put aside from Conti, of course, who is at Milan and hurt recovering from a knee injury. So the person also asked me to see if, especially if I could mention an Italian one, and I really did my best, and I was having a hard time finding for an Italian one. I would keep an eye on Murru, who was on Cagliari for years, is still very young, and he's on Sampdoria. I don't think he's played much, but Sampdoria has a good knack with young players. As far as the other best right-back prospects, I picked two. There's Lirola, owned by Juve, who's on Sassuolo. He's 20 years old. And then there's Hijaz on Napoli. He's been around for a while, but he's only 23. I think he's probably in the conversation for best right back in Serie A. I think his first season at Napoli, he was absolutely sensational. Took a little bit of a step back last season. I think Goulam's shining a little bit, but he's still 23. I think he could be a really excellent right back moving forward.
Well, I'll tell you who it's not. It's not Davide Zappacosta anymore. Damn right.
That's for sure.
All right, David, between Simone Zaza and Mario Balotelli, who deserves a call-up to the Italian national team more?
So I'm going to be honest. I don't watch that much the other leagues. I know Zaza's been doing well. I think Balotelli's been doing better recently. I'll tell you what's more realistic. Zaza's more realistic because Italy's national team manager, Ventura, really doesn't seem to be a fan of Balotelli's antics. He's made a lot of comments on players can't be out clubbing till 3 in the morning. So as much as I love Balotelli between the two, I think Zaza has a better chance of being on the team. At the same time, you know, Immobile and Belotti to me deserve to be the top strikers on Italy. I see them as considerably better than Zaza and Balotelli, and I'm not sure if they can really play together, especially with the talent Italy has at the winger position.
All right, the last Twitter question for episode 46, interesting one. What is your take on Ventura's comments about Jorginho and his status with the national team?
So for those that missed it, basically Ventura said that, yeah, Jorginho's really good, but I don't really use that role on the national team. So he basically closed the door on that. So I got a lot of problems with that statement. For one, I'm a big believer in general that managers should adapt to the players that they have. And this is especially on the national team because Ventura doesn't have that much time with players to kind of impose his system on there. So from my perspective with the national team, you just get your best players and figure out the formation around it. Jorginho is just so good right now. I love Diarra, but you look at when Diarra replaces him in Napoli's lineup, it's night and day. You don't see the Sarri porn football without him. So I'm not, you know, I know Ventura's been getting a lot of criticism, maybe some not justified, but I think in this case it absolutely is. So I want to thank you guys, as usual, for the great Twitter questions. Thank you so much to everyone who retweets our show. We count on you for promotion. If you like what we do, please leave us ratings on iTunes. That goes a long ways. And we're going to close the show with my good friend David Tenenbaum. We're going to get a little bit on Bonucci because it's his favorite player, but we're going to mainly talk about Curb Your Enthusiasm, my favorite comedy ever. If you're not into the show or you're not interested, by all means, please tune off. And we at least thank you for joining us the show so far. So for the interview part of the podcast, I'm very excited to be joined by my good friend, former colleague, David Tenenbaum. The reason I wanted to have him on the show is there's no one I know who enjoys and loves Curb Your Enthusiasm more than David, and I'm a huge fan of the show, so we wanted to talk a little bit about it with the show starting next Sunday. Also, David's a big Juve fan. Back in my days at JuveFC.com, we used to write together. Now you can read him, too, on Juventus Nation. And he started a very intriguing musical career. His band called Turkey Scratch is very intriguing. You can see them on Spotify. I think they're on Google Play as well. On his Twitter page, you will find all the information on that. So, David, we are thrilled to have you on Calcioland. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I've been listening the past few weeks. It's a cool podcast, and I'm glad I could be on.
Fantastic. And I'm also thrilled that you survived Hurricane Irma. I was a little bit worried that we wouldn't be able to do this podcast when that came. So good job there surviving. So before we get into Curb, I wanted to ask you a couple of questions on Juve, and specifically a player that I know you are very attached to. Maybe I should use the past tense, and that is Leonardo Bonucci. So I wanted to ask you, what was your initial reaction when the first report surfaced that he would be joining Milan?
Yeah, so I think, I don't know if it was a Tuesday or Wednesday, but when it first came out, it was afternoon or evening time here in the U.S., and as always, when there's the initial report with a transfer, I'm like, well, maybe it won't pan out. And especially with Bonucci, I was kind of in shock. But then, within like the next day, it was done. He was in Milan. He was signing. So it was surreal. It was also, I was really sad because Bonucci was, still sort of is, but he was my favorite player. I think now Dybala is maybe, but he was always a player I loved from back when he started at Juve. And back then, not a lot of people were too high on him, but he grew into a great player. So it was very, very turbulent 72 hours, just from shock to sadness and surreality, and then finally acceptance.
Okay. So what do you make on, you know, from my perspective, you know, Juve didn't really try that hard to replace Bonucci. They were going more with giving more responsibility to what they had. They brought in Hoedes at the end of the transfer market. I don't know if that had more to do with giving more options at right back and an extra insurance at center back. But how do you think Juve has handled Bonucci's departure so far?
I mean, it was tough at the time. There's really not much you could do when a player wants to leave, and he wanted to stay in Italy. So, you know, they kind of had to compromise there in terms of getting the most value on the sale. So that was unfortunate. But, you know, what can you do about that? I can't blame management for that. I think Hovedes is a really good player. I'm excited to see him. If he ever is not injured, I'm excited to see him play for Juve. And I think you got Hugani, who's going to be a great player one day. You have Caldara, Atalanta, who's coming next year. So they have prospects, at least for the future. But in the short term, I think it's definitely, the Juve are lesser in the defense now than they were. And I think also Bonucci, as we've seen at Milan, is a little less, he's worse off without Chiellini and Barzagli or whoever. Although, again, maybe both sides will grow well into the new situations. But as of now, it looks like both sides are sort of worse off.
Yeah, it's interesting because from my perspective, it's going to be whichever, you know, as you mentioned, is Bonucci going to adapt without who he had quicker, or is Juve going to adapt with not having him? Granted, they have a great offense, better than last season. So it's going to be interesting which team copes with the change better, is going to have a long say in their season. But now let's get to the meat and potatoes of why we have you on the show. We want to talk about Curb Your Enthusiasm. So for those of you that aren't interested in the show, for the rest of the podcast, we're just going to stay on this topic. So the new season finally starts on Sunday. I think this is at least 2 years off since the last one. So tell me a little bit from your perspective, what makes this show so great? For me, it's my favorite comedy ever. To me, it has surpassed Seinfeld for a variety of reasons, but I wanted to get your perspective on why this show is so great and why so many people relate to it so much.
Yeah, I gotta agree. I think as much as I love Seinfeld, I think Curb is probably even better than Seinfeld. And I don't know if that's because it's on HBO, so they can, you know, be a little bit more risque and they don't have to do so much coded language and innuendo. But for me, it's just like Larry David, comedic genius, but also the rest of the cast. I mean, it's mostly improv. So yeah, the rest of the cast, they're so skilled and they're able to just make, they take one funny concept or idea and they just will have a great scene just off of that. And they do it not necessarily consistently, because as you said, it's been a few years since the last season, but they've had now, I guess this is the ninth season. And in my opinion, the show, I don't know of many other shows that get better each season, but for Curb, for me, at least until now, it's gotten better and better. So that really is one of the reasons I love it so much.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that, you know, most of it is improv and what it is, and Larry David has his a couple of ideas, sketches, and what I love about the show is how they tie it in so perfectly at the end, based on all the improv. It's really genius, and I agree with you, it's not just Larry David, it's the tremendous supporting cast. So we've had quite a few seasons so far. To get ready for the podcast, I was reading a bunch of stuff online. You know, there are some people that say the show has gotten worse. I wasn't a huge fan of the last season, but to me, a lot of my favorite season's the one where the blacks come on. Leon's probably my favorite character. I also really enjoyed the one on the producers, and I wanted to get your take on what's been your favorite season so far.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I feel like each one, it gets better each year, but I don't think the last one would be my favorite. Season 5 is definitely up there when he has the whole, there's the kidney, and then he's trying to find out whether or not he was adopted. Yeah. That's great, because there's a whole thing where he pretends to be an Orthodox Jew that one episode, and he's like, yeah, he's speaking fake Yiddish, and he gets in all these situations. He's stuck on the ski lift with the Orthodox woman, and he starts eating. He has the edible, what was it, underwear or something, stuff like that. The Seinfeld season where they do the reunion is great, as is the producer's one. And I think, is it the season with the blacks? It might be the beginning of the next one, but where he goes to the special doctor who tells the women to dump their husband if they're sick.
Yeah.
That's one of my favorite scenes. When he's in the office, yeah, and he's trying to be as obnoxious as possible. I mean, that's one of my favorite scenes.
Awesome. So to me, as you mentioned, you know, the cast is great, and we have some regulars like his manager, Jeff, who's a stand-up comedian in real life. I think almost all the main characters are stand-up comics. Of course, we have Richard Lewis, who's a regular. We had Cheryl as his wife and ex-wife, who's tremendous and keeps up with him. But to me, what makes the show really great is all the amazing side characters. My favorites are probably Leon Funkhauser. I really love David Schwimmer and the producer season, because he was just so perfect, exactly as you would expect him to do, like slightly douchey. I wanted to get your perspective on what your favorite side characters are on the show.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, Leon and Funkhauser are definitely up there. I think Funkhauser might be my favorite, just because, like, his monotone voice is just so funny, because no matter what, I mean, even when he's saying something ridiculous, he's still that same, like, droning on monotone. But also just, like, his relationship with Larry, I guess they're best friends from childhood in the show, but Larry is such a jerk to him, and he does all these horrible things, like stealing the flowers from his mother's, after his mother gets hit by a car and killed, they have the roadside memorial, and Larry's stealing the flowers from the memorial. I mean, that's one of my favorite moments as well. And there's so many instances like that where Larry just does something really stupid and screws over Funkhauser, or just completely disrespects him. And he just keeps coming back for more.
Yeah. You know what I love? One of the reasons why I love the show so much is that Larry David's not afraid at all to be the butt of most of the jokes. And, you know, people screaming at him and yelling at him is always one of the highlights of that. So I was doing some research on some of my favorite episodes. There's so many that you kind of forget. So I picked a few. I was looking at a lot of the lists of the best ones and some that stood out to me. A lot of the most famous ones are the Carpool Lane one, where the one where he picks up the hooker just to reuse the Carpool Lane. And that one's really famous. I'm sure you know that, and some of our listeners don't, is that actually in that scene where he was at Dodger Stadium, they filmed it, and he got someone, he got away with murder because in his alibi, he said, oh, I was at Dodger Stadium, nobody believed him, but you actually see him in the background of the scene. And interesting, Larry David, they asked him, you know, what's the best thing you ever did in your life? And he goes, I didn't even do it on purpose, but I got this guy off for murder, and he wasn't guilty because of it. So that episode, special. Another one that I really like is the TiVo guy one. So that's the one where Cheryl and Larry get divorced. Cheryl's on the plane about to crash, and Larry's like, I can't talk to you now. I have the TiVo guy. I did a little bit of research, and supposedly that episode aired on the day that Larry David and his wife in real life split up. And then the other one that I love is the Crazy Eyes Killer one with the rapper. Also honorable mention for the one on the Survivor with the survivor from the reality TV show and the survivor from the concentration camp. So I wanted to see kind of what are your favorite episodes and why.
Yeah, I have also one of them, the Survivor one, because that's just like when the guy from the TV show is arguing with the Holocaust survivor about how he had it worse being on the show because he couldn't go to the gym. I mean, that's just like so unbelievable and so funny that I crack up every time. Also, more recently, I mean, Palestinian Chicken was an amazing one. A little controversial maybe, but so funny with Funkhauser becoming religious and then walking in when he's having sex with a woman and they're saying all these horrible things to each other. And then the golf tournament. And I mean, there's so many. I think that's also the one with the social assassin. So that's like, it was like four or five classic bits from that one episode. And then season five, I think it is, when he donates his kidney, he falsely finds out that he was adopted and his parents are actually Christians, and he goes and he meets them in like Kansas or Arizona. And so all of a sudden, Larry becomes like a normal guy, and it shows him like, you know, like doing like work around the house with a hammer with his new dad, and they're at the bar, and he's taking shots and playing baseball and all this funny stuff. And then at the end, he dies, and he goes to heaven, and he gets in an argument with his guardian angels, and so they send him back. That's peak Larry.
Yeah. Excellent stuff. So, you know, on a lot of these episodes, too, when I was doing the research on the best ones, you kind of forget, like, you know, there's so many side plots on a lot of them that there's a lot of fantastic scenes that stand out to you. They might not be the main theme of the episode. So when I was thinking of what my favorite scenes are, and basically if I had to show someone why Curb Your Enthusiasm is so great, I picked a couple of them. Obviously the one with Crazy Eyes Killer, the rapper, is fantastic when Larry helps him with some rhymes, and then he comes up with the "Your My Caucasian" line, which I think is terrific. With Leon, there are two great ones. I absolutely love the skit on the mopey dick, which Leon calls a mopey dick because his dick is moping as opposed to Moby Dick from Melville. It's a fantastic exchange, so Curb. And then the one that I really love is when Larry goes to the doctor's and uses the phone in the doctor's office, and there's a big controversy on you're not supposed to use the phone. And the discussion with the doctor on the little prick is probably my favorite scene in Curb ever. So, David, if you had to show someone that's never seen Curb and you're trying to tell them why this show is so great, which scenes would you pick?
Well, one that always sticks out to me, I don't remember what season, but it's the episode where Larry and also Jeff, they're trying to get their kids, in Larry's case, he's trying to get the black kids into the school, like a private school. And they go to a frozen yogurt shop, and this woman is getting, you know, she's getting way too many samples, like five, six, seven samples. And so he freaks out and yells at her because she's a sample abuser, and you're only supposed to get, you know, one or two samples, which is true. So that one, I don't know, that one always hits home with me because I think that's like such a good distillation of Larry as like he has all these unwritten rules that he's so rigid about. And so he'll confront people when they break them. And I think any scene where he's accusing someone of being a pig parker, which is sort of a similar dynamic, but those two are some of the ones that always stick out to me the most.
Awesome. So I know Alex, our producer, is a big fan, and he was very excited when I told him we were going to do this. Alex, do you have anything more to weigh? Any episodes, any scenes, any side characters that you love especially?
One specific moment, and I think it's later on when he's competing with Rosie O'Donnell for the same woman, brings the takeout order to his woman's place, and it's not sealed correctly. So he has to go back to the restaurant, and he really wants the guy to apologize. So the guy bows, which, of course, his culture does. And originally, Larry was very, very honored by the bow. But then later on in that episode, I think it's after he's walking away from the softball field, correct me if I'm wrong, he notices that a group of Asian men, one, you know, gets in the way or bumps somebody and then gives him a bow. And he inquires about the sincerity of the bow. And it ends up being that he learns that he got a shit bow. And I just think it was so funny because he just goes, "So I got a shit bow." And then guys, "Yes, yes, shit bow." So, of course, in Larry-type fashion, he then goes back to the restaurant where he got the shit bow and has to call him out on it. I just thought that was peak Larry. But as you guys said, there's so many to choose from.
Yeah, yeah. That reminds me, too, of the one with the shrimp with the takeout order where someone eats.
Oh, that's a
shrimp.
Classic one.
There's so many. We could go on and on. So, Dave, I know you've – I think you might have even watched some of the leaked episodes. You've probably done a little bit more research on the new season. I saw on the preview that Bryan Cranston from Breaking Bad is going to be on the show. So what can you tell us on the coming season? Anything you've read or anything you're especially looking forward to in the new season, which starts next Sunday?
Well, so those leaked ones, I'm not sure how complete they were. And it was sort of out of order, so I sort of just, like, shoved it out of my brain because I didn't, you know, I want to just watch it with fresh eyes as it airs, as it's meant to be. But I will say the one what I saw of Cranston was very funny, and he's very good. I mean, great actor, obviously, but his roles and his relationship with Larry is very funny, and it's also exactly what you would think Larry would relate to. Is he plays a therapist, and so it's exactly what you think would happen with Larry and a therapist, which I guess we've seen before when he has the... when he's in New York, he has a therapist who keeps telling him all of his other patients' secrets.
Fantastic. So, David, thank you so much for giving us a preview and going down memory lane on Curb Your Enthusiasm. Tell us a little bit about your band, Turkey Scratch. I have to say I've heard quite a bit of it. I really like what you do. So tell us a little bit about what your band and what you guys have coming up.
Well, we released an album in January. Called High Wasted, and that's the one that's on Spotify and iTunes and Google Play and YouTube and everything else, whatever. Not sure what's going to be in the future since we're all in different cities, but I'm working on music still myself. If anyone is in the South Florida area, I'm playing at a festival in West Palm Beach at Brewhouse Gallery this Saturday. I don't know how many people that plug will apply to, but you know, Americana or alt country or whatever you want to call it. That's probably your Southern rock maybe. And that's what that first album was. So if you're into that type of music, I would be honored if you give it a listen. Again, it's on Spotify and iTunes and everywhere else. So, you know, the songs we'd worked on for a while and had been playing for a while and different shows. And it was good to finally get the album done and release it, which we finally did a few months ago.
Awesome. So we'll look out for that. And thanks again for joining us on Culture Land, David. It was a pleasure chatting with you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was a pleasure.